Hello, 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 and welcome to My Empty Hands, a podcast about the martial arts with a focus on Kenpo. I am Reggie Darden, and I have another wonderful guest here, and we're going to get into the story of, you know, I just, once again, I'm my bad podcasting skills. I realized that I did not make sure that I got the proper pronunciation of your name. So go ahead and hit me with it, and we'll.
It's Aaliyah.
Aaliyah. Okay. Okay.
It's Aaliyah. My dad actually, when I was a kid, I would always say, my dad got my name from a book. It's from Frank Herbert's Book of Dune.
Oh, okay. So, right on. Yeah. Right on. I like it. I like it. Perfect. Perfect. So, we're going to get into your story and, go ahead and inform me and our listeners, how did Kenpo find you? How did you get started? I mean, obviously you come from a well-known Kenpo folk. So, I'm sure some people are a little bit familiar, but let's hear from you. How did Kenpo find you? Where did it all start for you? And we'll just go through your journey.
We're going right into it, huh? Okay. well, my love for Kenpo really didn't come until much later. It actually started prior. My parents' love for each other on the mat back in the 60s. My mom was my dad's student. They ended up producing three children. So out of that love for each other and for Kenpo, came to me not by choice. And believe me when I say I fought it every step of the way growing up. It wasn't until I was adult that I actually appreciated that I had this life skill and could accept the fact that all of that was pushed on me as a child was actually for my benefit. So it took me a little bit of time to embrace it. But now, you know, now as a 50-plus-year-old woman, I'm very pleased to say that I'm on the mat teaching every day. But it's been a journey because I never had a choice. And my mom was a very, at one point, you know, to my knowledge, I've never been corrected, was the highest ranking female Kenpo black belt at one point. And of course, there's Bob White. So coming from that background, I had a little bit of pressure to be the best that I could be. And I just fought it. And now I'm dealing, you know, it's payback because now I'm dealing with it with my own, I have 13-year-old twins. So they definitely are giving back what I gave out. So it all comes back around.
But yeah, every time I talk to people that their parents were or are involved in the martial arts, I'm always curious if one, you know, was it something that you were forced into? And then two, if there was a separation between the martial arts side of it and just life. So I relate it to the original Karate Kid movie. You know, Danielson's washing cars and things, but he's learning karate while doing these things that are not that you wouldn't think is doing karate. So I'm curious, as growing up, where was there that separation of, okay, like we're going to the studio and you know doing Kenpo, or is it just every day, you know, you're always on getting the Kenpo lessons while you're just living everyday life? Or was it separate? You know, mom and dad is mom and dad, and then in the studio they're the instructors. And
yeah, you know, it's our our family story is a little unique in the sense that, you know, I do, between my parents, there's three of us. My older sister, Andre, who is now a black belt as well, but she didn't actually grow up with us, which is a whole other story in itself. And then my little sister. So I was kind of an only child till I was around, till about 11. So I was primarily in the studio every day, and whining and complaining about doing classes every day. And then I would do the class and have a great time and then do it all over again. And I did the same consistently with all the tournaments I participated in. I just really, you know, and looking back, I just resisted it so much, but I think because it was such second nature to them, it was just part of our everyday life. And, you know, essentially being that only child till I was around 11, I shared my parents with all their students, you know, so I grew up with a lot of good friends and in a different aspect. But to answer your question, yes, I think the overall overflow of Kempo in the studio definitely overflowed into our home, you know. So, I mean, it's kind of, I mean, even my own children growing up were doing roundhouse kicks, you know, mm-hmm. when they're two on the wall. So I kind of ended up putting that on my own kids. But it's, you know, you met like all these things, all the experiences and all, like, even if a glass falls off the table, I can really quickly grab it. You know, I do have fast hands that way. That did become second nature because of all those things. And I can say that, like I said, it took me many years to appreciate that I have these life skills that not very many people had the opportunity. And if they did, you know, because if we listen to our kids, right, they go in, they might like karate for a little bit. It might be fun. And then they get what, you know, because a lot of it is repetition. It's boring, but that's how you build second nature. I mean, the repetition part of it is how we become, it becomes at fault. You never want to get in a position to where you're just standing there and someone throws a punch at you and you watch them do it. You want to be able to block because you've stepped back and blocked many times. So yeah, I'm so grateful for it now. But back then, you know, parenting back then was way different. And the ability to tell the kids what to do on the mat was way different. I mean, there was no goofing off in class. You know, my mom was a very, very tough instructor. And you did not, and, you know, she was small. She was 5'2", but she would fight, you know. People will say there's a couple out there, Jim McClure in particular, always talks about how my mom broke his nose. But my mom had a bit of a reputation, but she held up her end of the bargain. You know, especially in a time where women were not necessarily respected as much on the mat as they are today, which is still, there's still that barrier, but I would like to say she helped pave the way for that. So she really stepped up. So she was a tough one to train under. So even like I was on Romper Room as a guest on Romper Room.
Really?
I don't know if you remember the show Romper Room.
Yeah, I watched it very religiously.
But you can see, I think I was around 7 or 8, but you can tell the difference in who trained me. That was mostly my mom. And I was very like focused. And I'm like, geez, if I would have held that same focus all those years, who knows what the possibilities were endless. But so it's different now with teaching kids. You want to present this fun environment and also give them the opportunity to learn and be able to have these life skills and the confidence and all of those things that martial arts brings. I feel so privileged and happy that I am continuing to share that now. So, mm-hmm. and I'm definitely, what comes around goes around, dealing with my children in the process. So,
yeah, but, yep. So I'm curious, what do you think was the reasoning behind your initial resistance to it? Was it just because, you know, that's what your parents are saying, so I got to immediately not do what my parents want? Or was there something else to that?
Well, I think in my circumstance, because, you know, obviously keeping your kids in extracurricular activities it's expensive, you know, to put your kid in any additional sport. I, as a kid, you know, I had Michael Jackson pictures on my wall. I knew I would sit and watch hours and hours of videos on MTV and tape them and learn all the dances. I definitely wanted to dance. And my parents were at the studio teaching, so I had to be there. There's no room. So my girls are in dance because of that now, 5 days a week. So, and I'm at the studio 4 days a week. So it's that balance of, I just wanted to do other things. And I do think it is something to do with, psychologically, that our parents push it on us and being resistant to that. I have that resistance in me to, like, you can't tell me what to do. I'm going to do my own thing just naturally. Mm-hmm. So I do think that played a role. And even we have a sign in the studio that says, I never met an adult who was happy that they were allowed to quit as a child, which is definitely, you know, kids don't know what's good for them or what's best for them. They want what they want. But I do truly believe now, having gone through it, and I did quit in my teenage years. I didn't even get my black belt until I was in my early 30s. It took me a long time to get back there. And what I really needed, Mr. McClure actually gave a date, like, this is your date. I was back teaching at the studio. In fact, I just never wanted to get, that wasn't my goal. I didn't need to get my black belt. But gosh, I'm so grateful that I did. It was always too available to me, I think, and I was a rotten kid. So yes, it's just human nature, I think, to push back. We don't know what's best for us sometimes, and it takes time to learn and figure out what is. So I think I'll give myself some grace and just say I was a dumb kid and I needed to find my way back. But, you know, the terms of the studio, you know, with my parents, you know, they had, you know, a tumultuous relationship. I'd say very passionate is a nice way to put it. So the studio, you know, we've been there since 1980. I think we got the space. We opened in January 1981. It's my only constant. It's my only true home now that both my parents are gone. So the fact that I have the ability to carry on the legacy and that it's home base. There's so many people that come to the studio to pop in to say hello that I haven't seen since years, but it's like, oh my gosh. You know, I remember everybody, and my dad had that such ability to remember everybody. And I never, you know, I thought about it. He, as my dad, I'd say, hey, do you remember my friend from fifth grade? And he'd go, oh yes, I remember. But he really, truly did. He remembered. And I definitely have that same, like, I remember all the kids' names and all of these things, but you know, in stepping away from the studio, I was a hairstylist. I am a hairstylist of about 30 years now. And so my ability to, I have these long-term relationships with my clients that I'm not willing to give up. So I still do hair. I just did a client this morning. I think that's my favorite part about the studio in terms of the family environment and the relationships that have built the long-term friendships. It's just home base for me. So I'm so happy that it's still there. That's my home. So, and I know it is not just for myself as a family member, but for people in our community. It's pretty amazing. You know, my parents started and built it together. My dad ended up continuing it on, you know, after my divorce. I've all these sisters now. I've got my little sister, Kelly, from my dad's second marriage. And I have two stepsisters from Barbara, who's, my mom was a Barbara, but I also have my stepmom, Barbara, who is at the studio with me. And fortunately, she and I have a really wonderful relationship that we've been able to maintain, if not gotten closer since my dad has passed. So, it's kind of full circle for me. So I feel pretty blessed. I every day I wish both my parents were here, but I know that they're with me, you know, in other ways. So.
Gotcha. So what was the turning point in as far as resisting and then embracing Kenpo? Was there one specific thing, or was it kind of a buildup of certain things?
Well, you know, when I went back, honestly, I'll be truthful and say, I even wrote this in my black belt thesis, that my dad bought a car for me, and in exchange, I had to teach at the studio. So when I taught at the studio, it was like kind of a bartering system. And I cut my dad's hair every 2 weeks also. So that was included in the bartering. And then my black belt test was set. So my black belt test date was set. Excuse me. So, you know, then it was like this wonderful, I've never been in the best shape. Training for my black belt was the best shape of my life. I was so strong. I was there like 3-4 hours a day, just training. And I really, you know, once I got my black belt, I was kind of consistent. But I've been with my husband for 31 years, and we've done everything in slow pace, right? It took us 10 years to get married. Then it took us another 8 years to have kids. So once I got, I taught till I was 7 months pregnant, and I've been home with the kids, who are now 13. So even in coming back, like, it was hard for me to get back because it just wasn't a priority. My kids were my priority, and I, you know, I've been PTA president and all of those things that I never thought that I would be involved with. I'm very involved in our community. And so getting back to the studio again took me time. So it's like I took that break as teen into my 20s, and then I took the break after I had my kids. And with my dad being so sick, you know, and a few times he had cancer a few times. And this last one, I went into the studio one day, and I was in there by myself, and I just said, I can't let this place go. So my focus shifted then. Like, I never really considered myself carrying on my family legacy that way. I mean, I did in a different way, but not to the aspect of my love for teaching and being on the mat. I've kind of taken that, being in the position that I have been my whole life, taken it truly for granted. But in doing hair, my favorite thing about doing hair was making people feel good. And when they left, their visible change in their mental state because they felt better about themselves. I'd say that's really my favorite part about teaching in Kenpo and this whole experience is really making a difference. I'd say that's when I decided, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm not going to let this place go. I'm carrying on both my parents' legacy. I think that's when the true love that I needed to find within myself came. That I never really had experienced before. So it's fairly recent that I don't see it as, it's always been part of my life, whether I liked it or not. So finally it has come to this point where I'm like, I feel like I'm exactly where I should be, exactly where I need to be. And I'm making a difference, which is the most important. So I really love, you know, even I listen teaching kids is really intimidating. And it's really intimidating for instructors, even though it's because they get overwhelmed. Kids are unruly. They, you know, you have to kind of keep them in line. It's like herding cats sometimes, you know, it's almost impossible.
Oh, yeah. But the cats would be a lot easier.
I know. But, and what's so cool is there, I've come to a place because I primarily teach the kids, which I used to resent a little bit because I felt like, you know, obviously teaching adults, you're feeling, you're, you feel heard and they're there because they want to be. But the kids are, and I do think it helps becoming a parent myself. They're funny. They say the funniest things. I mean, the other day I said, you know, when you guys punch, you might want to just turn your fist sideways, do a vertical punch so your radial nerve doesn't get hurt. It hurts when you hit that. And they're like, why is it called a radio nerve? You know, it's just little things that they say that I can, it's fun. And I'm enjoying it. And you can see visibly when they come into the studio, how it's a new place. First of all, they're not sure of themselves, and you watch them build character and you watch them build confidence. And that's really my favorite part, is watching them grow and mature, and of course seeing their training improve and their ability to listen. And you know, there's nothing better than teaching a coachable kid who actually listens and does what you're encouraging them to do. There's great pride in that. And I've really, especially, you know, my dad's been gone, going on 2 years in May. So it's been a growing process. I mean, it was not an easy transition, you know, for everybody. I feel like when someone big in everyone's life leaves us, everyone's kind of adjusting to figure out their part of their new place, I guess, to say, new relationships being built, everything shuffles around, and it's harder some days than others. It's harder for some people than others. They don't adjust back. Loss is hard for everyone, and I know that my dad was such a big huge presence that it's been an adjustment. So for me personally, I think my love for Kempo has come out of, you know, I'm going to be 51 in just a few weeks. So it's taken me a little time, and I have definitely room to grow and room to improve every single day, always. So, and I every day I'm just trying to be grateful for, you know, what I have to move forward from and continue on helping people. So.
No, I like that. I can definitely relate as far as seeing the growth and the progress of the students. I've taught capoeira for a lot of years, and mostly adults, but there's been some kids sprinkled in. But just even with teaching adults, yeah, seeing the student progress and grow, not just only in doing the movements, but you, when you're around people long enough and you have this connection with people, you see them grow and change in a person, and their attitude, their mindset, and even when, you know, they come to you with problems that are outside of the studio, you just being there to you know, help guide them, or even if you're not even giving them advice or anything like that, just being there to listen to their situation is. It's a good feeling, and I think anyone that's getting into teaching and doing teaching should you know, have their minds and their hearts open to all the various things that come in, and not just be kind of focused on, okay, well, I need to make sure that this person just gets these techniques and kind of send them on their way. It's like we're kind of little bit of a, I don't know, life coach and guru and all kinds of other, all those other, you know, great mentoring things that are important. And so,
absolutely, yes.
So I'm curious, since your parents are of a particular standard, was there pressure coming up in the school because your parents are who they are, or was there pressure on you, you know, within the school? It's like, oh well, you know, this is the teacher's kid, so they've got to be better, and you know, were you challenged for that? Or
oh, absolutely. So, and even if it was, you know, my dad was always concerned about nepotism, right? So that special treatment to us because of being his children. But I mean, you know, aside from the pressure of him, the pressure on ourselves, you know, that's enough in itself. You know, there's no way you go in classes and do halfway work. I mean, the one thing though, I'm a goof. I mean, I'll say it, like, and my laugh will just carry. And so I always used to get in trouble for laughing. Like, there's no laughing on the, but I was always, I could not like be completely serious all the time. So that was probably one of my things. I mean, my dad had this look, this eyebrow. I mean, you ask anybody, all he had to do was look at you and you knew you were in trouble. I mean, anybody can say, and you know, I wish I had that now with the kids, because I am not intimidating enough for the kids to actually fully get the full merit of what it's like to have a presence like Mr. White on the mat. I just don't have that in me because I am a little softer. But I mean, if I'm mad, you can definitely tell. That's my mom. My mom, if anything, had, you did not mess with my mom if my mom was upset. So I would never have dreamt of goofing off with my mom teaching. My dad, I knew I can get away with it, a bit of a daddy's girl, but I still got that look. But I eventually grew immune to that look.
That's pretty impressive.
Yes.
It's hard to become immune to the look. I don't think any age. I know. I mean, fortunately, I'm the good son of my brothers here. But I still, there are lines I still wouldn't even come close to with my mother.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. I mean, in my house, my kids, it's definitely me as opposed to my husband also. But with, in terms of being on the mat and at the studio, it was a little hard to maintain that level. Well, plus my dad was so well respected, and, you know, he truly loved coaching. I mean, he read book after book. He loved John Wooden. He really and I know that I'm so fortunate to have been coached by him because of that. And it's definitely, I hear myself when I coach. I mean, I hear him in myself. I'll say things and go, oh my God, that was so my dad. But thank goodness, you know, because, you know, someone told me the other day, which I just think is the nicest compliment that I could have been given, is that I was the best of both of my parents. And to me, that's like, you know, everyone has their faults. But that was a nice compliment that I had gotten, coming from someone who knew them both very well. So yeah, I just now with all those things, I try to, again, I'm still learning every day to be the best me. You know, it's kind of interesting too. You know, my dad was 33 years sober when he passed away. I am now 6 years I don't drink at all, and it has, growing up in a house where that was part of our norm, right? And with me and, you know, I do think that focus of when, of course, you know, alcoholic behavior, I think someone who dedicates their life to something like martial arts or karate has that addictive, strong-willed personality. We don't do anything halfway, you know, it's kind of like
how that is.
Yes. Yeah, so like martial arts for people to dedicate all of their time, they have that personality in them anyway, because it's stick-to-itiveness, it's dedication, and that's what alcoholics are, essentially, is they dedicate their time to all those things. So it's like I have shifted that focus also, and so every day is a day to be the best parent, best person, best sister, best friend, all those things that I could be. And hope I don't mess up, because we all do sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I know all about that. Mm-hmm. Mess up all the time, especially yes. with this podcast and all the things I'm supposed to do and I don't do. But
well, it's trial and error, right? That's what yeah. I think, like, all that, when we go through all of the things that we go through in life, well, how do you take them? As learning experiences or, oh, woe is me? It's all learning experiences. We learn as we go. And without those mistakes, we don't improve ourselves. So I don't want to say I'm grateful for all the mistakes and all the, but I'm certainly appreciate them, because it's the person I am today. So
yeah, no, we are shaped by both our successes and our failures. So mm-hmm.
that's definitely
important. So I wanted to jump over to, the life of competing. I didn't do much competing in my first go around in Kenpo. So I started in Kenpo in the 90s, and there was about a 25 plus year gap between Kenpo schools for me. So I didn't do a lot of tournament stuff, and the handful of tournaments that I did compete in, I just was sparring, and I'm fairly sure I was disqualified every tournament I went to. So yeah, I wasn't great at it. Toyed with the idea of maybe doing it in my quote unquote old age, at least just doing like forms and whatnot. But I don't know. We'll see. I've got a lot of things on my plate, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, can you kind of talk a little bit about your days competing and mm-hmm. and?
So I did most of my competing in the 80s. So I think I fought and did kata. And around 30 tournaments. I ended up the only trophy. I had about 30 trophies. The only trophy that I ended up keeping was I fought on stage at the internationals, for teams. And so our team got second place, but the first place team was still a Bob White team, but my team got second, and I saved my one medal from the internationals fighting on stage for the finals. So that was a wonderful experience. I mostly liked kata. I love kata way better than sparring. My friend Andrea, growing up, she and I have been friends since we were 8 years old. And so we would fight in tournaments, and she ended up becoming a world champion. She was amazing, an amazing fighter. That was definitely her thing. For me, it was forms. I really liked doing forms. I love hitting. I don't like getting hit so much. So I have to tell my kids at the studio that now, like, but it's so important. It's so important part of their training to really get the full benefits of it. But so tournaments were, yeah, and even like for, you mentioned the Karate Kid earlier, the Karate Kid filming was a real tournament in a gymnasium, and our school competed. You see my dad many times in the last scene, but that was a real tournament. that our kids competed in. I actually did not compete in that tournament, but it was, I mean, obviously an experience that I'll never forget. Even I have pictures that I've actually shared. I've got pictures from Karate Kid at the tournament. When Chad McQueen asked my aunt out, my mom's younger sister, she's only 6 years older than me, asked her out on a date, which she, my mom said no, which I think was probably a wise choice. And then Karate Kid 3 was actually filmed at Burbank Studios on set. So we got to kind of cruise around Burbank Studios and experience a couple things. And I was not, you know, for Karate Kid 3, I was around 13. So I guess the girls. And I was, I would say my confidence level was a little too, I look back now and not very impressed with the way that I, like, my confidence was too much, but I did not care for Ralph Macchio very much. He, like, he was around the, we were just happened to be walking, and he told his security guard, get these kids away from our trailer. And we weren't there for, we didn't know it was his trailer. So I had to make a point to say, we're not here for you. But I mean, I don't think I would exhibit that behavior now, but sometimes I question it. My, I'm pretty quick-witted sometimes and say things that I usually speak first and think about it later, which is always an ongoing, something that I work on.
Oh no, that's the world I live in. So
I know, I wish I thought a little bit more. I'm getting better, but I just kind of say what's on my mind all the time. And then I have my luxurious laugh, after that, kind of smooths it over, but I got to watch myself. But that was my, so in terms of going back to your question, competing, now it's fun to take our kids to go compete. So stressful though. Oh my gosh. Watching all the kids compete and you want them to do so well, as a coach, it's a whole different experience. So it's pretty cool to, that I do have the experience on both ends. I did compete, and now being on the other end of it. So I definitely think it's a great experience for everyone to compete, even as adults. You know, I'm not sure, we had the internationals last year. I'm not sure if, and it's, you know, with COVID and all the things, if that's something that's going to be continuing on in the future. But yeah, have you competed?
Just a handful, and not as adult. I was a teenager when I first started, and as far as the form side of it, I didn't want to do it because, I mean, at the time I was still a orange belt and didn't have any of the cool forms that I wanted to compete with. Although, I'm forgetting who it was that I talked to not too long ago, but they were like, oh, well, I did long one in a tournament, and he's already a black belt. He's like, no, I go to tournaments and I do long one and I do fine with that. So I guess that that wasn't an excuse, but I wanted to do all the cool forms, so.
Yeah, well, Kempo is hard. If you go to a regular tournament and there's all these amazing flips and weapons and all those things, Kempo by comparison isn't as flashy and showy as that. So it's kind of, it is better to compete now in terms of Kempo forms in a Kempo tournament because it's the same. It's kind of a different, I wouldn't say better or worse, it's just a different level of showmanship. So, and I love all, I mean, my, that's the one thing with my kids being in dance, they can do aerials, all these things. So I definitely incorporate that into their training at the studio because of their dance experience. But overall, Kempo does not, that's not usually on our curriculum.
Yeah. Well, the thing that, I kind of ran into was that you had to kind of know what kind of judges were there. So if we went to a tournament and there were mostly hard style judges, then we wouldn't score as high, because a lot of the people on our team would do some of the more soft, stylish form. So the school that I started at, we were essentially on the Tracy's Kempo curriculum. So a lot of the guys would do forms like Tiger and Crane and Book Set, which are more kind of kung fu circular kind of movements versus those real deep stances and hard punches and things like that. So if there were a lot of hard style judges and somebody comes up and does Tiger and Crane, they're like, that doesn't look all great. You know, where's that deep horse stance? And so yeah, I got kind of turned off by that, and you know, the vice versa, if there were a lot of soft style judges and we're, you know, doing something like a, you know, long two, then where's those flowy moves? Well, this one doesn't have as many of those. So
yes,
I got kind of turned off by that. And then in the sparring side of it, in our kind of in-house school and in-house tournaments and sparring classes and stuff, we would kicks to the groin, back fist to the head, we're fine. But a lot of these open tournaments, you can't do that. And I would kind of, one of my things was a back fist into kind of a reverse punch thing and back fist to the head, and I'd throw that back fist and they're like, oh well, you can't do the head contact or the face contact in this tournament. And so I'd get the warning and like, okay, don't do that. And then the blood gets flowing and there goes that back fist, and they're like, oh yeah, oh, you're out of here.
Yeah. I fought in a tournament once, and it was a studio from Mexico, and you know, the fight barely, it was like, go, she just threw a hooking heel kick right to my head. So, and it wasn't a disqualification, but that's how it opened. And I actually ended up winning that fight, but it was because I fought smarter. But I didn't expect that. So that's one way to open up. I was probably, gosh, it was all before I was in high school, all my competing days. So I was relatively young. I can't even imagine now seeing someone do that to one of the kids at the studio. I'd just be like, oh my gosh. But my mom, when they fought in the 60s, right? No pads. At the internationals, it's all concrete. So there's no pads. There's no pads on the floor. There, you know, it was like knuckle to knuckle. So it's such a different, even when I fought as a kid, there's no padding. It was all on the concrete. We didn't have headgear. We wore mouthpieces. You know, I never actually wore my mouthpiece. I think I just chewed mine on the side and it like hung out the side of my mouth. But it's the level of, now you see kids with like helmets and shields and like protective gear, like chest gear. It's like, geez. But you know, I take all that a little bit, you know, it helped toughen me up, I guess.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm in the old school camp of the way to think, is as far as if we're doing things with control, we don't need to be bubble wrapped. Don't see it quite as much in, well, I don't know. I guess I haven't really watched kind of the current scene, but I just kind of get in my mind, and you kind of see these things all over YouTube and stuff, but they have the Taekwondo tournaments with the kids. And I mean, they're just wrapped every way. Every inch of them is covered with all kinds of crazy pads and stuff. And it's like, can't even move, let alone kick and punch each other. And then a lot of them don't do the punches. They just do kicks. And it's like, well, what are we even doing with all of this? So,
it's tough. We've got, and you know, we live, not to say much about South County. We are very much, you know, we're in Costa Mesa, borderline Huntington Beach. We're like Newport Beach. So, our kids are a little more sheltered, I guess you want to say, compared to some. So they don't like to get hurt, but I keep saying no one does. The whole point of karate is, you know, to not get hit and all those things. So there's a method to the madness in terms of, you don't want to be on the receiving end. As my dad would used to say in karate, it's like Christmas. It's better to give than receive. So yep. That's definitely the case.
Indeed. I like it. So I was curious, with the competing, was that something that you were forced into, or did you want to do that, or was it a split?
Well, no, Reggie, I didn't want to do it. I was consistent across the board. Every class, every tournament, it'd be like, you're competing in this tournament. And then I would whine and complain, same old story, win, be happy, then do it the next Sunday when there was another tournament. Because back then, there were tournaments all the time. I mean, we went to Vegas, at least maybe twice a summer. There were tournaments all locally around. I feel like it's kind of getting back. I know there's a few tournaments coming up here pretty soon. So the tournament circuit back then, though, was, you know, we were busy. We were taking kids. We had a van. We would have a van full of kids. We would go to the tournament, compete, go back. And it wasn't like now. Like, I couldn't imagine sending my kids off to a tournament and not being with them. But back then, it was like, go ahead, take them. and I was with my parents, of course. But I mean, I have never missed. I just missed my first like real field trip yesterday. My kid's 13. I've gone on every field trip for the most part. And so back then, though, it was like a big to do. Like, you just sent your kids off. To go. And
oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So I came up in a very different time. So I've mentioned this on maybe an episode or two before, but it was very much a different time when I was coming up. So I'm originally from the San Diego area, and I stun a lot of people that I talk to in that in elementary school, we took a field trip to Tijuana, a school sanctioned field trip to Tijuana. And people do not believe that was the thing, especially looking at it through the lens of today's times. there is no way that anyone would even think to do such a thing. But, for good or for bad, that was something that happened. So
that is I am surprised to hear that, but it was a different time. And being in San Diego, it is, you don't realize how accessible Tijuana is. I mean, now people are flying. You can park at the border and walk over and fly within Mexico from the Tijuana airport. I mean, it is so accessible, but mm-hmm. Yeah, we wouldn't do that today. It has changed in the sense of all of that with teaching the kids and the amount of discipline and the amount of how you can discipline them without feelings hurt and doing it in a manner which is effective and not intimidating to where it is scary for them. That's like I always said, that level of respect, that's like the intimidation of having the kids be in line and behave and do what they're supposed to do without the intimidation, more so is that they have respect enough to want to do that. And that's kind of where I like to focus on. But man, like I said, I wish I just had a look. I can do.
Have to work on that.
Yes.
So I'm also curious. So the way that your parents brought you up in Kenpo, have you applied that same to your children, or have you modified it, or have you decided, no, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it a different way.
No. Well, you know, the one thing about martial arts in general is, you know, even having kids come in, we really want to instill internal confidence, which we all lack one way or another. You know, I feel like for my kids, you know, all these being respectful, kind, helping others, giving back to the community, all those things my parents did absolutely instill in me. So in terms of that, all the same, it's a trickle down, and those are the good things. Like, I always find it very interesting, especially today with social media, and you see, you know, and knowing a lot of people and all these forums, and the back and forth between these grown men is so disrespectful. And so, I mean, I'm blown away, quite honestly, is like, you have been in martial arts for this long and you talk to someone like that? This is exactly what we are supposed to not do. And I really want to be an example and work my best in doing that. So instilling that in my kids, just the level of respect, regardless of the discipline, right? We're all supposed to respect each other. I mean, it's a little insane to me that it really kind of is counterproductive, and it doesn't really meet the standards of what it is to be a black belt and to behave like that. It's, and nothing. I mean, the only thing I have control of is myself and how I handle my own family or my own school. But man, I think people need to put it in check a little bit. that's what it's about. It's what martial arts is about. Respect, discipline, and just being the best person you can be internally. So, and as I've said many times, I'm still working on that every day. But yes, so, and I'm grateful for, you know, I didn't ask to be part of this world, but I'm certainly have learned to embrace it. So,
very well said. I like it. All right. So we're going to move into our lightning round here. Got a few little questions, as we head towards wrapping things up. First question, being, do you have a favorite technique?
My favorite technique, I would say, is, triggered salute is one of my favorite techniques. I just like the coming right up palm strike. There's a few, but I'd say triggered salute. You know, my dad's favorite technique was lone kimono, which, who knew, I asked him prior. I started asking him all these questions. He was probably thinking, why didn't you just read my book? But, you know, I was asking him questions.
I can totally relate. So
yes.
with this show, I guess the good host interviewer thing to do is to do all this research on my guest. And very rarely, if ever, do I do that. So sorry, guest, but I'm more interested in just kind of having just this on the fly conversation and trying to get away from kind of the standard stuff, especially with some of my more well-known guests that have been on a billion other shows. It's like, okay, well, everybody asks the same questions, and I hope that I don't do that. There's definitely some overlap, and that's fine. But I just prefer just to kind of let things go how they're going to go, versus, oh, okay, well, you know, I read all these things that that you did, and like, okay, yeah, everybody knows that, especially for some of the more established guests. But yeah, no, we've got the question, just ask it, and that's what it's all about. So
Oh, yes, there's no doubt.
All right, next question. Do you have a favorite form and or set?
Short form 3, always my favorite. I like the broken rhythm of it and the flow of it. That's definitely my favorite. And that was usually what I competed with, was short form 3. And I believe that was my dad's favorite form too. I mean, I wish I had video of my mom's forms. Man, she was amazing. And I do, you know, sorry, Dad, know that I got most of that from Mom. But so yes, short form 3 for sure.
Yeah, I think that's definitely one of the top ones with many of the guests. I think most people like that one. All right. Next question. Do you have a favorite weapon?
Just a straight front thrust kick, I would think, would be my favorite weapon.
that works quite well. That's no, mm-hmm. That's a good one. All right. This next one used to just be one question, but I'm trying out splitting it into two parts. So first part is, if there is anyone that you could train with, living or dead, including one, you know, people that you have trained with, besides Ed Parker, who would you want to train with?
My mom, hands down. Barbara Lee White, definitely. She's, you know, even she finally, after all these years, she's been gone since 2002. She was only 50, which is weird because I'm 50 now. That's why I had a big 50th birthday party. But her love for Kempo was everything. And she finally got acknowledged in the Kempo Hall of Fame this past summer. So that was amazing. But I wish so badly she was here, because in my head, I want to do all this. And I know my forms are okay. And I wish she was here to coach me to do them better. So that would be my ultimate, is to be able to work with my mom. If we talked about other things, we would just argue, but I would love to work with her. I'd be very open. I would be coachable for my mom.
Very nice. I like it.
Finally. Finally, after all these years.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. The second part of that question is, who of a fictional person would you want to train with? Or I should say fictional character.
So. Yeah, Ma, what do you mean by fictional? who fictional that I would like to train with, or a fictional character? Gosh, that's not something I've considered. You know, I guess there's one thing. I'm a huge Quentin Tarantino fan, so I loved all the Kill Bills. You know, those scenes were pretty amazing. So, I mean, if I had, you know, being in Uma Thurman's position is like a dream, you know, in a sense. So that's the only thing I mean, that's not something I've ever considered. Thank you for, I'll have to think about that more, but being a Quentin Tarantino fan, that's what comes to mind.
I like it. No,
that's Kill Bill. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. No, when I kind of started with that, and I just said, you know, anybody fictional or non-fictional, and I got, you know, sometimes somebody would mention kind of the usual. Well, originally I didn't add in the besides Ed Parker, because a lot, you know, this being a Kempo focused show, of course, everybody's going to say Ed Parker. So I realized, okay, I got to take him off the table. And that made it a lot harder for a number of people. Some of the guests, like we've had Mr. Miyagi, I've had Kung Fu Panda. I think Kung Fu Panda actually got mentioned a couple of times by previous guests. So I was like, you know, that's good for me. Kind of one of my spirit animals, I like to say, is Jenny Lawrence from Karate Kid and the Cobra Kai, just especially in his version that on the Cobra Kai, it's kind of the way he's kind of stuck in the 80s. It just really speaks to me. I really like that. So yeah, so I'm trying to kind of split that up to see how that goes. So, so thank you for that. I like it. All right. So now is the time for shameless self-promotion. So you can plug anything that you like, or if there's anything that we hadn't covered that that you want to get out there, now is your time to say whatever you like, and then we will close out for today.
All right. Sounds wonderful. First, I'd like to thank you for having me. This was kind of my first... I've always been Bob White's daughter. I mean, in fact, I walked around as, I'm Bob White's daughter, Bob White's daughter, Bob White's daughter. It's nice to just be Aaliyah Cass. So I appreciate you asking me. Thank you. We're at 1125 Victoria Street, Costa Mesa. The studio's is doing great. We just started an online, we do women's empowerment classes probably about once every quarter. We just had one last Saturday, but we're starting a women's only Tuesday night class for 1 hour from 6 to 7 that Mrs. White will be teaching. I want to openly thank all of our students and all of the instructors. If I don't mention Vishal Shukla, he's gonna give it to me in some way or another, but he definitely, all our team, I just feel so, my dad left this legacy and left this family, and has really helped with it's been a big, tough transition without him. He was such a big presence for all of us. And so I just wanna openly thank all of the loyalty and the shared need to continue on my parents' legacy. And I feel pretty blessed and pretty grateful for that community. So, but we're there. We're at the studio. We are having our Royal Family Kids Camp, which is one that we've donated over $1 million over the years to this great organization that helps foster kids in need. And we're having our seminars here in a few weeks. Last year we had Benny Arquitas, John Sepulveda. We always have a great community come together and raise money for a good cause, and that's in March. So all those things, come see us. I do all the social media on the studio page. I do reels, try to do them on a daily basis. To my other, like, the artsy part of me that gets to come out where the studio's concerned, because I do tend to be a little bit more on the creative side. So I get to do that for everyone. So yes, that's basically it. And again, thank you, Reggie, for having me. It's been a pleasure speaking with you, and hopefully we'll get to meet in person someday, and I'll look forward to that time.
All right. Yeah, no, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I always enjoy these chats, and especially getting to meet new people. So I'm very, very thankful for that. Of course, we'll definitely have to do this again and get into more interesting things about your journey. But I just can't thank you enough, and can't wait to get this out for everyone here. So thank you again.
That's wonderful. Thank you. You take care.
You too.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to My Empty Hands. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend. If you didn't enjoy it, please share it with an enemy. If you'd like to be a guest, or if you would like to recommend a guest for the show,
please email me at podcast@talkingkenpo.com. Thank you.